Remember the passion you felt doing that particular thing you always loved to do when you were a kid? Whether it was to laugh or to love or to explore, to play or create. Those passions weren't just you being a kid. They were gifts of clarity. They're the desires of your heart authentically expressed. Hi, I'm Courtney Cole, and this is the Love Freak Podcast, where we remember who we really are and what we've come to this planet to create. It's here we make a choice, love or fear. It's here we choose to vibrationally realign ourselves with the truth of our essence, love, 528 hertz, the love frequency, which therefore allows us to realign with conscious healing, authenticity, and creativity. Don't freak out. This is your true nature.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Love Freak Podcast. I am bringing you again superstar from season one, Mr. Dean Schlecht. You may remember his amazing insight on the ego and how it can separate us from what truly is. And understanding what truly is really understanding love. And we've been talking a lot about that 528 lifestyle and what it means. And for me, it's really aligning as the love that we truly are, to let go of resistance and denial of love and align as it. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about love. What is it? What does it truly mean? How do we live a life filled with it and of it? And how do we find it when it feels lost? Is it something that's always present? Dean wrote this beautiful essay on love, and I had the pleasure of reading it. He let me know that he put a link to it on his website. So I'm going to put that link in this the podcast notes here so you can read it yourself. Please do. It's amazing. But in it, he really seems to uncover what the true meaning of love really is and how we can align as it every second of every day. Because I don't know about you, but I feel like I just kind of get it all wrong sometimes, you know, like, but I feel like reading his essay, it really gives me so much more insight and so much more understanding to the fact that real love, acceptance, and joy, peace, gratitude is really closer to us than the air that we're breathing. It's so ever present inside of us. And I think what I really struggle with personally is the ability to really stay connected with it, to really figure out what's getting in the way, to align as it, to become it. And with the elections happening tonight and the state that our world has been in, just the amount of division, what better time is it to align with, to become, and to share love? So Dean, thank you so much for being here and sharing your insight with us once again. I just appreciate it so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm going to start off with a pretty big question for you.
Okay.
As I feel like, you know, we've really developed such an idea of what love is in our culture. But I'm really starting to wonder if we really know what it is. So I'm just going to ask you straight up, through your experience, through your studies, what have you determined that love is?
Well, of course, the answer is multifaceted. The most succinct answer to the question of what is love is that love is the fundamental energy that drives all of creation. It is the essence of the source of everything and the foundation of everything. And everything meaning not just people, but all that is. That's my perception. And it's not my unique perception either. It is the perception of all of the mystics, of all of the cultures that we have any record of. Plus, it is the common awareness of people whose egos have been diminished through psychedelics and have touched deeper reality because the filter has been removed chemically. So that is the deepest, most basic answer.
I love that answer. It's really the energy of everything. I was actually talking to a friend of mine and a listener of the Love Freak podcast, Katie, she actually lives across the pond in England. And, you know, she was talking to me about this on Instagram today and just saying how you know, she loved our last conversation where it kind of talks about psychology and spirituality kind of comes together, and how science and spirituality, you know, so many people have kind of separated the concept, like
right.
Science and spirituality don't go together. But I was telling her that, and this is just my humble opinion, that science really kind of taught me what God is, what spirituality is. And, you know, she kind of categorized it as, well, spirituality is kind of that loving force, that is that emotional loving force that is constantly nurturing and comforting us. And that scientific is really, you know, the energy that's dividing cells and doing all those things. And I was kind of saying to her, like, for me, there's no difference in that nurturing energy and the same energy that is dividing the cells and creating everything around us. What do you think about that?
No, that's my point too. I fully agree with you that ultimate reality is that which stands beyond space and time. It's not a thing, but it emanates into space and time as loving consciousness that then expresses as energy, that then expresses as material form, that then expresses as ourselves through evolution, which comes back up the ladder as we achieve consciousness and move into oneness and love. It's like a cycle.
Absolutely. A beautiful cycle, such a creative cycle. I mean, it's pure creativity really at its finest. And
that's, you know, right.
Last time we talked, you know, a lot about the ego, and you gave us a very psychological perspective as well as a spiritual perspective. And you mentioned in your essay that they kind of go hand in hand. And I really appreciated that because I totally agree, kind of like what we just talked about. But, you know, you have a background as a priest, as a psychotherapist, as a spiritual director. And I noticed in this essay, you talk a lot about Jesus. And being that you have an array of knowledge in both spirituality and many different religions, as well as psychology, like, what is your perspective mostly drawn from? Is it based from any particular belief system, or how is that kind of organized in your mind?
Well, after I left the priesthood, I put behind me the doctrinal teachings and the scriptural teachings that I had been given in seminary and all, because they didn't seem to work very well. They didn't ultimately make sense. And I also have a strong natural interest in science and technology. I just love it. I read about it all the time. And that the two didn't go together very well. And so I just kind of let the whole theological thing fade. And as I moved into my second career as a psychotherapist, I found myself drawn to a Jungian perspective. Mm. And
can you explain what the Jungian perspective is?
Right. Well, at its core, Carl Jung taught that there is a deep self, and that deep self is a much broader, more deeply moral consciousness than the ego self, which is the surface consciousness that we have. Mm-hmm. And our task is to align the ego self with the deep self so mm-hmm. that the deep self can move through you. And out of my experience with deeply wounded clients whose personalities had fragmented, there would be a one core self that was not really a personality, that functioned as an inner guide and teacher and showed that person and me as counselor how to go in the most healing direction possible for the individual. And I was just amazed at the power and insight of these elements within the psyches of these fragmented people. And so I started looking for it in other people and in myself. And whenever I looked within, I found it. Mm. It was there. And that was deeply resonant with what Jung was teaching. And so I, as I put the two together, my development as a psychotherapist underwent a profound transformation in which I became kind of a transpersonal psychotherapist that depended upon this spiritual resource as the primary source of healing and saw myself as merely a catalyst for that to happen. Mm-hmm. However, as I became more and more aware of the nature of this deep inner spiritual energy, I saw that it resonated with certain themes out of my Christian background. And so I found myself drawn again to some of the Christian theological perspective that I had been originally educated in. Mm-hmm. And so in this essay, I boiled down what I feel to be the central critical issues of Christianity about learning to love, as reinforced by my direct experience in myself and my clients, as to how love actually works as a healing power within the psyche. Mm. And so by putting the two together, I have come to appreciate again some of the rich kernels of healing insight that came from Jesus' teaching, which is a little different than what you will find in the religious doctrines of Christian churches, but it is quite evident in the teachings of Jesus, both in the canonical gospels and in what are known as the Gnostic gospels, particularly the gospel of Thomas and Mary.
Why do you think that those teachings are different on the Christian side of things?
Well, what happened is that the teachings of Jesus got filtered through the cultural perspective of the Greco-Roman culture of the time. And the Greco-Roman culture was similar to ours because it is, in a sense, the foundation of ours, in that it prized logical, analytical thinking that developed models of the world based on language and math, mostly language, to create a construct of the world that became our working map of reality. That is effective in developing science and some kinds of understanding, but it also takes what is a living, pulsating, unitary reality, which is reality itself, both externally and internally, and puts it into frozen conceptual boxes that then can be manipulated.
And for sure.
By taking the teachings of Jesus and turning those into dogmas, conceptual frameworks that then become convoluted and frozen in creeds and so on, you lose the essence and flavor of what Jesus taught, as well as corrupting it by engendering a more control-oriented mentality instead of the free, spacious, flowing mentality that Jesus taught.
Like, so, you said, it kind of fits in those boxes. It starts to really get boxed. You even said in your essay, you said people were taking the stories of Jesus, they were dispersing them all over, and people were implementing that into like their culture, that what right. it meant in their culture, right? So it's right.
And
it's changing the story in a sense based off of how they're filtering it.
Exactly. And some of them filtered it less than others because some of the cultures were not so invested in analytical, rational thought as the Greco-Roman culture. Mm-hmm. And so some of them stayed truer to what Jesus intended than what became mainstream Christianity in Europe and America and so on. So anyway, the inner work and real relying upon the deep spiritual self, as I experienced it through people's inner processing, helped me come to a point of view that was remarkably similar to what Jesus taught if you can get beyond the culture, the Western cultural accretions that distorted his teachings.
Mm.
And recent research into the original teachings of Jesus and the so-called the Gnostic Gospels underscore that. So that I feel now a refreshed connection with my ultimate origins, so that I can reclaim who Jesus was, even though I don't have much investment in Christianity per se.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I come from a very similar background. You know, I grew up in the Christian church, and I am a big fan of Jesus. I'm definitely not a fan of religion and the boxes that you're kind of talking about. And I kind of found and formed a deeper relationship with my spirituality and with Jesus when I stepped a little bit outside of that box and really felt like I got a more deep understanding of what the scriptures actually taught Jesus to be, but I was actually experiencing it on my own and not through some of those filters. And it became so much more rich. And what I discovered, I really started to look at things in a different way as like Jesus as the consciousness, the Christ. You know, when you think of Christ, you automatically think of Jesus, the person. But Jesus was the Christ, and the Christ is alive in all of us, right? And it's a consciousness. And that consciousness is love. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, very much so. But the form that that Christ energy or that deep inner consciousness takes varies from person to person. It might take the form of a great mother. It might take the form of an inner wisdom, wizard-like figure. It might take the form of a guardian angel or just a pillar of light or whatever. Varies from person to person, but it's the same essence. And it's the same consciousness that Jesus embodied in his life. So
he is the ultimate master, right? He's able to actually become the Christ consciousness,
yeah.
Which is something really we can all do. I mean, I think that's Jesus said, follow me, you know,
exactly.
be like me in the sense of you can do this too.
Right. He didn't say, worship me. He
right.
said, follow me.
Right. You can
Makes
do
all
this
the
too.
Difference in the world. And also along that line, traditional Christianity says we are saved by his death and resurrection. And that's in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to remember that before Jesus died, Jesus was transforming lives because of his teaching and example.
Mm-hmm.
People who listened to him and followed his example were transformed. They were saved
mm-hmm.
through that, not through appeasing some angry God with a blood sacrifice, which is kind
mm-hmm.
of monstrous,
mm-hmm.
but by taking who Jesus was and following that as their lifestyle as well. So Jesus is more a spiritual teacher and master than some kind of savior, as Christianity typically represents. I mean, he is a savior in the sense that he shows us the way, but
shows
not
us the way, absolutely.
But not because he sacrificed his life to appease God. We all have the Christ potential within us. We all have the way of Jesus as our way as well. And if we can appreciate that the kingdom of heaven is not out there or later on after we die or something, but is within us. And it emerges through metanoia, that is a change of mind from small mind to greater mind, the deep self, and through kenosis, which means the emptying of ourselves, letting go of all of our attachment. Metanoia, which is interpreted as repentance, is actually meaning the Greek means turning from one mind to the other. And this is meaning turning from small mind or ego mind to greater mind.
Mm-hmm.
And kenosis which is another central theme, is the emptying, the letting go, not clinging to anything, because every time you cling, then you stand in the way, you block the flow of love. But by learning to live in a way that is completely open-handed, where you don't cling to anything, even life itself, love then flows freely. And Jesus was a prime example of that.
Absolutely.
And what he taught is similar to some Eastern teaching, but not the same. It is a unique perspective, and one that resonates highly with myself, and that I see lived out in my clients all the time.
I love what you just said about Jesus not clinging to anything. I think in a lot of spiritual practices, they talk about that a lot, about the idea of detachment. Right. And I remember when I first started to really dive into my spirituality even more, that word really bothered me. Because I was like, I'm a really emotional person, and detachment to me was like almost like I'm not living my life fully, you know, like I'm not able to. Yeah. Like living life kind of numb. But I love how you are just putting the not clinging to anything. Really, detachment is surrendering, that kenosis that you're talking about, right? Kenosis. Yeah. Did I say it right? Okay. Yes.
Kenosis, yeah. The emptying.
The emptying, the really just being able to look at everything is not necessarily our own, you know?
Exactly.
But how do we do that? Like, I mean, even looking at like a loving relationship, someone you love so much, and thinking that it's not your own, or like, I don't know, being able to look at like an actual loving partnership with detachment. You know, I know that if my boyfriend and I broke up tomorrow, I would be devastated, you know, like it would send me into a spiral of sadness. Like, how do you detach or have that surrender towards things?
First off, I want to underscore your distaste for the term detachment, because I share it. I don't think that's a good way to put it. I believe that we are invited to dive into life deeply, to feel deeply, to connect deeply, to appreciate fully what we've got with all of our hearts and our senses. So using the example you used of a romantic bond, I believe that you do best if you just give yourself wholeheartedly to it, not be detached or a step back from it, but you step into it so that you can, so that you could be the best romantic partner possible, feeling the closest connection you can to the other person. When you do that, the flow of love is strongest, as obvious. And when the flow of love is strong, then you are connected to the depth, to the Christ energy, however you want to put it. But you are connected to your essence, and you become your most authentic self as you give of yourself wholeheartedly to the other in a romantic bond. I believe that that is one of the most important spiritual practices anyone could have, is to be a really passionate romantic bonded person. Okay. However, there's a cost to that.
Yes.
And the cost is, if the person dies or leaves you, you can be heartbroken. You will feel deep grief because you allowed them to mean so much to you. And there's nothing wrong with that. The Beatitudes speak of, blessed are those who grieve, for they shall be comforted. The grieving is the natural human response to being intimately bonded. And if you take the risk of intimate bonding and unwilling to accept the pain that's inevitable, inevitably that will come with it, your life will be full and rich, but painful at times.
Right.
But underneath that pain, there'll be a lower level or a deeper level of peace and joy because you are living in a giving, loving frame of mind. Even with the loss of your love, you're still committed to love and feeling it.
You're still experiencing, right? You're still
you're still open.
Yeah, and one of my biggest beliefs, I think, that I'm kind of coming to really gather is life is really all about, like, when we talk about purpose, what is our purpose? And really, I really believe that it's just as simple for everyone is that our purpose is to evolve. And when we go through experiences like that, when we do give ourselves fully and we allow ourselves to really experience just surrendering into the oneness, into the love, with that might come pain, with that might come heartbreak or whatever, grief, but it's all leading us more and more into that expansion, into that evolution, if we allow it to.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think it's beautifully said.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, Jesus has so many beautiful messages. Like we talked about, like you, and you mentioned this in your essay, you know, of Jesus being love, that Christ consciousness, you know, and when I'm going back to kind of the concept of like what love is, what is it? How have we gotten this wrong? And I'm curious, we were talking about this before we hit record, but I wanted you to share this. Is there a difference in your opinion in aligning with love and then being or becoming love? Are they the same thing? Is aligning with love and being or becoming love, are they the same thing?
Not exactly. It is commonplace for people to value love as an important energy in life. And then they try to be as loving as possible out of whatever awareness they have at the ego level. They try to be nice. They try to be kind. In fact, that's how a lot of people interpret the gospel, is basically Jesus went around saying, be nice.
simple message.
Right. That's not it.
Right.
And it's not good enough for the ego just to try to do its best to be kind and loving. It's better than going around being nasty, but it's not the same as becoming love. It's still an ego-determined, controlled frame of mind where you set up a model of what you as a loving person should be, and then you effortlessly conform yourself to that.
Mm.
That is, in a sense, trying to align yourself with the concept of love. And as I say, that's a little bit better than being mean and nasty, but it's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
You become love by realizing that what love is for you is beyond anything that the ego can create, and that you become truly loving by allowing love to possess you rather than you trying to possess the qualities of love. And you allow love to possess you not by efforting or doing, but by letting go and moving into a receptive, open frame of mind that invites love to take you over, to flow through you. And there's a couple things you've got to do for that to happen. Well, actually, there are several things. I've written guidelines for love. It's at the end of my essay. For that to happen, for you to move to a space where love possesses you, you've got to first stay as close to reality as possible. You don't want to live in illusion, because then you're just developing a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to accept and practice the five basic elements of love. That is attention, acceptance, appreciation, affection, and allowing. And that's all detailed in the essay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here. I have many questions on those five A's. So, but keep going.
But then the third thing you've got to do is you've got to nurture a lifestyle grounded in receptive consciousness. We have basically two kinds of consciousness: ego level instrumental consciousness that is dedicated to control, and then the deeper level of consciousness that is called receptive consciousness, in which we aren't interested in control, but rather we attend to connection and openness and receptivity. Mm. In receptive consciousness, you get a quality of intimacy with yourself, other people, and life. You feel it's based on the presumption of oneness and the experience of that oneness as best you can. And this supports physical, mental, spiritual health, mm. as well as a full and meaningful life. How you do that, how you move to receptive consciousness, is first off appreciating that it's a possibility and appreciating its importance. But secondly, you check yourself and see if you are in a fight or flight freeze response toward life, or in an open, quiet, receptive attitude toward life. In other words, whether you're being driven by the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight freeze response, or you're driven by the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, in our culture, the majority of people, the majority of the time, are in the fight, flight, or freeze response. They're on guard, they're fearful, they're, you know, experienced as being anxious or numbed out and frozen, because they are have a sense of being at battle with life or in threat from life. Mm-hmm. When you are in that nervous system, you are locked in ego's need to control. You're fear-driven. And you're not going to be in receptive consciousness. You're not going to be able to feel the flow of love within you. Mm-hmm. If you can relax deeply and simply be in the parasympathetic nervous system, then you can move toward a much more open, receptive, non-ego-driven consciousness. And then love has a chance to work on you and flow through you. And it's easy to switch gears.
It's not being blocked.
Right. And yeah. You can switch gears just with a couple minutes of deep, slow breathing. Mm. You can really feel it. And then if you follow that up by welcoming, intentionally welcoming love to move in you, to take care, to take over you and to take control of you, it'll happen. Mm-hmm. Unless you're blocked by inner pain, inner wounds or something, which you then need to work on and deal with.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, no, I'm just sitting here just loving everything you're saying. I feel like I'm definitely tend to lean more probably to that anxious style of type of personality, and really just, I'm in the process of learning to really let go into that love. And I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking and wondering, I just wrote this down, you were saying kind of ego is really formed out of control, right? And you're really trying to make all this rational states. It's associated with control. And then love is associated with surrender, with kind of giving in, right? Yes. So I was curious, would you consider ego to be the opposite of love?
No. Ego is an integral part of who we are. It evolved to find food, to protect us, to take care of us, etc. It's not the opposite of love, but when we believe that ego is all that we are, and we think that our story about ourselves that we develop at the ego level defines us, then it does become the opposite of love, or the energy that blocks love. But if we appreciate ego as an evolved mechanism that protects us, but is not really who we are, then we can have a sense of humor about it and and stand a little bit back from it, appreciating that it's just a tool, and it's a fine tool as long as we appreciate the fact that it is not the whole of us. A good metaphor is that the deeper self is like an orchestra, and the ego is like the band manager that goes from town to town arranging venues and hotels for the players to stay in and everything like that. It functions in the outer world to kind of make the way clear for the music to be played. So it can and should be an effective servant of the deeper self. And in that way, ego and love go together beautifully, because ego becomes the window or the channel through which love flows out into the world. It becomes a vehicle of connection. So ego per se is not bad or wrong, but ego discerned as my essence is where we go wrong and where Western culture has made its biggest mistake.
Ego loves to take over and wants to be the one in the limelight for sure. Yeah. And it does define a lot of our reality. Like, I feel like once it does take over, it really creates kind of that duality message, you know, yeah, where love creates a message of wholeness and oneness. Duality, once it takes over, ego, once it takes over, creates the message of duality. And you talk about that a lot in your essay. You talk about reality, and you talk about how we look at ourselves so often as separate, but that Jesus kind of offered a non-duality message. He was really he was that love. We live in a very much of a like self-care culture where it's all about, you know, kind of fixing ourselves so that we can be better for others or serve the world in the best way. And, you know, in the Bible, and you mentioned this in your essay, it talks about loving your neighbor as yourself. But in your essay, you mentioned that loving your neighbor as yourself isn't really about loving yourself so that you can be better for the people around you, but loving your neighbor as if you aren't separate.
Exactly. Yeah. It might seem like a subtle distinction, but it's a really important one.
Right. And that's kind of what the ego does want once it takes over, is takes away from that message of oneness.
Right. Exactly.
And I loved that. And you talk about, you know, the Father and the Son is one. You mentioned that I am the vine and you are the branches, and how that Jesus isn't really referring only to himself, like that he's talking about, he's getting everything from the source, that oneness. And would you say that that's the same message of like the Holy Trinity? Like, is the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, all that oneness of like the source, the love, the energy, like, is it all kind of filtering into each other?
Yeah, exactly. That concept of the Trinity it makes sense to me, that it is love spilling over, circulating around. It's like a model for how we live in creation, where love comes, wells up, spills over, connects us with everything, and takes us back to the depth from which love spills over, comes through us, and so on. Like, we are living out a Trinitarian sort of existence, from source to expression to indwelling back to source.
Yeah, because I think it's easy to look at the Holy Trinity as just like what is, in a sense of Father, Son. When you think of Son, you think of only Jesus, and then the Holy Spirit. You know, it's kind of like that. It's out there, but really, I feel like we kind of all fit in that Son category, right? We're all sons and daughters of the Christ, and it's just really that overflowing of oneness.
Yeah.
But I know we don't have all the time in the world, and I just would talk to you all day, Dean. You're just so full of just all the wisdom, and I just appreciate you being here so much. But before we leave, I wanted to really get back to what is love. And I think something that really
or not necessarily what is love, but kind of how to dissect love, how to become love, all of the things so that we can kind of apply it to our daily lives. And you mentioned the 5 A's of the human experience, which you already mentioned when you talked about those guidelines, but they are attention, acceptance, appreciation, affection, and allowing. And when I read this in your essay, you know, you talk about allowing people to be as they are, allowing just life to be as it is. And that really hit me. And I felt like once I read that, I got love. I'm kind of getting love all wrong. So I'd love for you to just talk about that really quick and kind of each little A and how it really is kind of like the practical tools and steps for us to become love and be love in this crazy world we're living in right now.
Sure. First off, I need to acknowledge that this model was developed by David Rico, R-I-C-O-H. So if people want to pursue it in greater depth, he has many books out, several of them with this as a fundamental theme. So anyway, this whole model, attention, acceptance, appreciation, affection, allowing, is what a healthy mother feels to its to her newborn. It's the essence of maternal infant bonding. And the mother in this frame of reference, if she is healthy, pays deep attention to her child, if she's obsessed with the child. She accepts that child as it's given to her and what, you know, with all of its potentials and possible deficits, etc. She's open to that. She appreciates the beauty and the goodness and the wonder of her new baby. Out of that, she feels deep affection. She wants to hold, caress, touch, kiss the baby. And she wants to allow that baby to flourish into whatever that baby's nature is, to become its fullest self. And she doesn't want to get in the way of that. She doesn't want to conform her idea of who that child should be onto that child, but she wants to give the child space to become who it really is. So, and that in our culture in America, I think that makes a lot of sense to most people, especially most women and mothers.
Absolutely.
So that whole neural circuitry that's involved in those 5 A's between mother and infant is reprised in romantic bonding. That's why romantic bonding is so powerfully important to people and such a profound part of the spiritual journey. Is it reawakens all of these spontaneous elements of love. And whether it be the maternal infant bond or the romantic bond, these 5 A's express what love is within a human context for a human being. And so if we appreciate that the maternal infant bond or the romantic bond is the template for love, and then use that to apply it to all of our relationships, both to other people, to the animals in our life, or to the world around us, we will be allowing ourselves to be as open as possible to the flow of love from our depth. By letting go into this, we will be practicing letting go into the deepest self.
Now, I gotta ask you though, you said in your essay, you say that you can apply these things to everything. You just said that just now. You said, you know, everything we can encounter. You mentioned nature, you mentioned politics, you mentioned adversity and change. And we're living in, you know, everyone says unprecedented times. Yeah, I saw a meme the other day. There was something that said, I miss the precedented times.
Yeah, right.
If we're living in the unprecedented, I miss the precedented times. I thought that was funny. But how do we use this information? You know, we're in a time where everything's very divisive. We're about to have the election. We have coronavirus happening. Like, how do you apply that to loving your neighbors? When we think so differently, maybe, or your family might think so differently, like how do we continue to use these
elements to find unity in the midst of all the divisiveness.
All right. We have to acknowledge that we are not unique in having love as the foundation of our existence or our being, that everybody has that core, that deep self that is pure loving wisdom. So that's the ground of everyone. Everyone has that spirit.
Everyone is divine.
Yeah,
everyone, we're all made in
everyone is divine.
That divinity.
Everyone has that. So you got to start with that. And then everyone has an ego. And a lot of people's ego has been formed by a culture that focuses on instrumental consciousness or transactional attitudes in human relationships. And that then leads into tribalism, nationalism, rigidity and control as a political structure. And that's all the driven by these people who are ego-ridden in this rigidifying, deadening frame of reference that is driven by fear and anger. Now, if you came across an animal in the wild whose leg was caught in one of these traps and it couldn't get out and it was snarling and angry and you wanted to help it and it kept attacking you, would you feel, oh, that stupid animal, shoot it? Or would you feel sad and compassion for the animal and hope that a way could be found to release it? Well, of course, if you're at all tenderhearted, you would try to figure out some way to release it without getting bit.
Right.
maybe shoot it with a tranquilizer dart or something. If you think of our political culture, these are people caught in a mind trap that the culture has generated and is being exacerbated by others caught in the same mind trap. And they're out there snarling and snapping and creating havoc and all. Well, you don't hate them for it. You see the beauty that's at their core and you just wish that some way could be found to release it. And since these are human beings caught in mind traps, if you're going to interact with them, you've got to interact with them in such a way that has the best chance of facilitating a reformation of consciousness. Okay, how do you do that? Well, you don't do it by calling them names or by slamming the door in their face or just slamming your own mind to them. You do it through respect and empathy. In other words, you take the time to make sure you really hear what they're saying. And then you take the time to listen for what's underneath what they're saying by asking questions, by having compassionate curiosity, by being respectful. And then you try to be in their shoes to the best of your ability and reflect back to them what you're understanding and appreciating. And then when you have earned the right to express your own divergent point of view, because they have a sense that you've heard them, they might be open to hearing you. So
it's really that attention, acceptance, right, appreciation, affection, and then the allowing of letting them be
who they are, because you're not going to beat them into submission anyway.
Absolutely.
And so that's how you deal with people who have a different point of view. Now, let's say, you know, despite the fact that there are some people trying to be this way, it doesn't change anything. And let's say that Trump wins and the culture goes further down this road and it looks like our country is hell-bent for destruction. And that may happen. Our country may be in decline, and that decline may be intensified by another 4 years of highly destructive management.
Right.
This means that we allow that to be the truth and not get ourselves all worked up about the fact that America is in decline. If it is, it is. Every other civilization went through decline as well. We've got to realize that underneath everything is love, and that love is powerful. It is flowing forward. It is the driving force in evolution. And in due time, through the evolution of society, we will see love expressed more fully. And while we might have hopes it'll happen within the coming year, because a more loving, intelligent, useful political culture will take root, it may not happen for another century. And if that's the case, so be it. You have to have hope based in a trust in the power of love that flows through everything.
Right. Absolutely. And everything is in ebbs and flows, and everything is constantly balancing itself out, whether we can really see it or not. Right. You know, we're living through all the phases of the pendulum swing. Right. So when it might not seem like everything is in balance from our perspective and viewpoint now, we always know that we can trust that love is balance and that everything is always balancing itself out. I think the hard thing for me, and sometimes really going back to that allowing stage of the five steps, is, you know, love is also just about being, you know, and you talk a lot about that in your essay, and like, you know, a lot of people right now are feeling like, we can't just be, we have to step up, we have to say things, we have to get on Facebook and say everything we feel and mean, and like, we're going to change people's opinions and whatever. Like, how do you allow the world to be like it is, but also feel like you want to do something?
Well, doing is important. I have no problem with doing. But when doing is not grounded in being, then it is imposing ego structures on the world.
Wow, that is so good. That's so important.
Yeah. And ooh, some of those, you know, ego structures have varying values. Some are better than others. Some are worse than others. But it's still imposing an ego structure. When you are grounded in being, where you are quietly opening yourself, letting go, not trying to control anything, and letting love flow through you, then that transformative energy of love will alter your consciousness so that your doing will be more in tune with your depth. Mm. Your doing will be more fruitful and effective. So your doing isn't out there flailing about trying to impose an ego structure. Your doing is more dancing with a flow that comes from a deep, uncontrollable, ultimately mysterious part of you that you're letting go into through an act of trust.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, what better advice can we get right now, just to, as a reminder, to just stay in love?
Yeah.
Just stay in love. And when we feel that ego starting to take over and try to control, to just remember to surrender.
Yes.
Yep. To remember to allow, and to remember to treat people and our world and our situation with attention, with acceptance, with appreciation, with affection, and just allowing and love. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Dean, thank you so much for all of your incredible wisdom and for just being the ball of love that you are.
Sure. You're welcome. Glad to.
And if you're interested in reading Dean's essay that we've been referring to this whole time, please do that. Go to his website, www.deanschleck.com. That link is going to be in the podcast notes so that you can check it out, or you can find it on my Instagram. So worth doing it. Each page, you're just diving deeper in yourself, learning something new, and learning more how to love. Don't forget, if you want to dive deeper into each episode, you can now do that with my partnership with Patreon. You can sign up to have access to weekly journal prompts that help you dive deeper into you and to your experience and how you're experiencing the podcast each week. Or if you just like to support what we do each week, there's a link to both of these options in the liner notes.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Love Freak Podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe. You can also follow me on Instagram at @thelovefreak_. Don't forget, that's F-R-E-Q. Or to find out more information, you can go to www.thelovefreak.me. Look for a new episode every Tuesday.